living, it's out there growing.
Hey everybody, this is Jim Boge, and you're listening to Music in My Shoes. That was Vic Thrill kicking off episode 25. As always, I'm thrilled to be here with you. Let's learn something new or remember something old. So Jimmy, a friend from New York posted on Facebook recently about her son. And it said, yes, he's on Channel 12 News. Yes, he was at the New York Islanders watch party at UBS Arena. Yes, he shaved off his eyebrows for two tickets to NHL playoff game number 3.
Yeah, as one does.
And yes, he shaved off his hair for two tickets to NHL playoff game number 4.
Oh, wow. He got a double dip.
Yes, he did. He also won a signed jersey from all the players, which was the one and only thing I'm happy about. Again, this is his mother that had posted this Facebook post. This is a real post. I'm not making this up. This is something I read. A sports fan going all out to be there in person for playoff hockey. What could be better than that?
Not much.
Not much. He's in his early 20s. Let me put that out there.
All right. All right.
So it's going to grow back. A little bit different for me. I think if I shave my eyebrows off, I'm not sure that they would grow back.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. So when I saw this post, the first thing to come to mind was when Bob Geldof's character, Pink, shaved off his eyebrows and shaved down his head as he begins to lose his mind in the movie Pink Floyd, The Wall. Do you remember that movie, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah.
The character of Pink is based on a real person, that being Syd Barrett, who was an original member of Pink Floyd. He left the band in April 1968 due to his deteriorating mental health. In June 1975, Pink Floyd's in the studio finishing off the song written about their old bandmate and how he was missed. Remember when you were young, you shone like the sun. Shine on, you crazy diamond. A man with a shaved head and shaved off eyebrows entered the studio. No one knew who he was at first, but then it was discovered it was actually Syd Barrett.
Ah.
Their bandmate that had been with them since they started till 1968. Good health, long hair. Now, they couldn't even tell who he was. So, now, there's a look in your eyes, like black holes in the sky. Shine on, you crazy diamond. I bet you didn't think a guy shaving his head and his eyebrows for hockey tickets would take us back to 1975 and Pink Floyd.
It did.
It did. But I didn't know it was going to. I had no idea. That's what I like about the show. I see something, and it reminded me of this, reminded me of The Wall, reminded me of Syd Barrett, and I just thought that I would tell this story. April 22nd, 1982, is the date of the first concert I went to, The Police, at the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale, New York. It was the last night of the spring leg of the Ghost in the Machine tour. There's just something about live music, and I was hooked for sure that night. You could feel all of Sting's bass notes throughout the show. Like, I just remember every time he hit that bass, you just felt the vibration. It was crazy. Like I said, never been to a show before. It just was like, I just got to keep going to shows. I have to do it.
Yeah, you had the bug.
Yeah, definitely had it. So some of the songs they played that night, Message in a Bottle, that's what they open up with. Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. We talked about that a few episodes ago. That's a song I learned how to dance to, if you want to call that dancing.
I don't.
When the World is Running Down. Thank you, Jimmy. The Bed's Too Big Without You, The Do-Do-Do, The Da-Da-Da, Bring On the Night, Invisible Sun, Roxanne, Don't Stand So Close to Me, Can't Stand Losing You, So Lonely. That's not all the songs. That's just some of them. But, I mean, that's a great, you know, set list of songs. Great show. I listened to the show the other night. It's still as good as I remembered it. So it was a lot of fun listening to it. You can find a lot of stuff out there. I think it's archives.com, and they have a lot of shows. The quality is different depending on what particular artist, what particular show. But what I had remembered, that's what it was. It was awesome, and I'm glad that I got an opportunity to go to it. A buddy of mine actually took photographs at the show, so I have some pretty cool show pics, especially at the end, with it being the last night of the tour. They just dropped all kinds of confetti, all kinds of stuff. Like, you could barely see through it. It was definitely a lot of fun. So I'm telling you, I can still hear, after the show was over, the crowd leaving their seats and everybody singing E-O-O, E-O-O, E-O-O-O-O. It's like everybody was singing it.
See, I thought it was D-O.
No, that it was not.
It's E-O.
Yeah, it was not.
My whole life, I thought it was D-O.
It was not Ronnie James Dio. Had nothing to do with him at all.
Okay.
It is E-O. But you know what? Here on Music in My Shoes, you can learn something new.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Three Little Pigs was E-I-E-I-O, right?
Yeah, this is okay. Not E-I-E-I-O. It's E-O-O, 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 E-O-O-O.
All right.
Hey, so Jimmy, what was your first concert?
The Ramones, 1983.
Really?
Yeah, it was awesome.
So where was that?
That was at the Agora Ballroom, which is the place that my brother and Greg Wheat saw The Clash.
We talked about that on episode number 6 of Music in My Shoes.
Yeah, and my brother John took me to the Ramones concert. He was 18 and I was 13, or he was 19, I was 13. And yeah, it was just completely life-changing for me. I loved it.
So Jimmy has a Ramones concert poster that's hanging up here in the studio. He's talked about the Ramones several times, you know, through the Music in My Shoes podcast. And we've talked about it, you know, when we just talk, because occasionally we do talk outside of here. So he is definitely a big Ramones fan. So was it sold out? How many people?
It had to be sold out, yeah. And when I say my brother took me to the concert, he just took me to the concert, and then he went upstairs where it was 18 and up because, you know, they had adult beverages up there. And at the time, the age was 18, I think. And I was just downstairs, a 13-year-old on my own at a punk rock show.
So you didn't go with any friends? It was just the two of you?
No, it was just the two of us, and he met up with his friends, and I was just like, all right, I'm going to stand here on this chair by the soundboard and go crazy.
So did you know a lot of the songs at that time?
I knew all of them, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Were you playing any of them? Were you in a band at that time?
I was not playing music yet, yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's pretty cool. So we'd like to hear from the listeners telling us, what was your first concert? You heard about mine. You heard about Jimmy's. And, you know, tell us who, where, what year. And you can contact us at musicinmyshoes@gmail.com or connect on the Music in My Shoes Facebook page. And please make sure to like and follow us there. So on the first episode of Music in My Shoes, we talked about a single by the Libertines called Run, Run, Run. And they released a new album that came out in April of 2024, 9 years since their last release. And they have topped the UK album charts for the first time since their debut self-titled The Libertines reached number one in 2004. So 20 years after the last time they reached number one in the UK, they have reached number one again. I still can't get enough of this song, Run, Run, Run. It's a move your feet, clap your hands kind of song, and I just love that song. I have been listening to it since before episode 1. This is episode 25. I listened to it while I was driving in here. I absolutely love that song. I know, Jimmy, you had heard it a little bit right before we did episode 1. What are your thoughts now, you know, all this time later?
Yeah, no, it's a great song, and I'm really excited about listening to the rest of the album. I listened to a few tracks, and they were all really good.
Yeah, it's a really good album. It really is. If you give it an opportunity, give it a chance to listen to, you might not have listened to the Libertines before. You might not think it's your type of music. It's definitely a very British album, but it's a good album. And it definitely reminds me, you know, when the Kinks were very British at times, and mm-hmm. the way some of the songs are set up and the vocal style is very Kinkish at times to me.
Yeah, yeah. And the musical arrangements and everything kind of gives that nod to Britishness.
Yes. Second single was Night of the Hunter. It's another good song, more subdued than Run, 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 but it is a really good song. Other songs on the album I like are Mustangs, I Have a Friend, Shiver, Osh, and songs they never play on the radio. A surprisingly good album after all these years away. Jimmy, I don't think I mentioned the name of the album. It's All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. Did I mention it?
No, you didn't. Now you did.
I thought I forgot to. Yes, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. It's named after the street where the recording studio is located, Eastern Esplanade in Margate, a seaside town in Kent, England. Connected to the studio is a hotel of 7 rooms that the band also owns. And it's named the Albion Rooms, I think is how you pronounce it. Well, get this. Pete Doherty said on Matt Wilkinson's Apple Music radio show that they acquired the bathtub that Jim Morrison died in. Yes, you heard me correctly.
Okay.
All right. So Jim Morrison of the Doors.
Yeah.
After recording L.A. Woman, he moves to Paris, March 1971. And then July 3rd, 1971, is that he had a heart attack in the bathtub. That's the official word. According to his girlfriend, who's no longer with us, she died in 1974. But some say he died of an overdose in the bathroom stall of a club and was brought to his apartment and placed in the bathtub to try and revive him. Now back to the Libertine story. Carl Barat was telling a story about buying a Jimi Hendrix coat at an auction when Pete, out of nowhere, out of the blue, just says, "Hey, we got this bathtub that Jim Morrison died in."
All right. Wow.
Is that crazy?
It is. Kind of gross.
Is it true? That's the key.
All right.
You know? So I reached out to someone who was in the Pete Doherty Libertines camp, and he said the jury is still out on the bathtub story. Although he swears it is true, he meaning he's talking about Pete,
mm-hmm.
he was given it by a relation on his wife's side. So Pete believes it is the bathtub of Mr. Mojo Rison.
All right.
All right?
It's a disgusting story. Rub-a-dub-dub.
So, Jimmy, on from the bathtub story, I'm ready for a minute with Jimmy.
Oh, you're going to give me that kind of lead-in. Wow, okay. And in other news, here we go.
It's time for a minute with Jimmy, minute with Jimmy, minute with Jimmy. It's time for a minute with Jimmy, minute with Jimmy, minute with Jimmy.
Timer starts. So, you're talking about the Ramones, and Minute with Jimmy today is about the 45th anniversary of It's Alive, one of my favorite live albums ever, Ramones Live. After their first 3 records came out, has all the greatest songs on it, and they were in their prime. And my story about it is, it came out in April of 1979, and I learned how to play guitar from that record. So I would come home from school, I plugged in my guitar that I had gotten for $15 from a classmate into my stereo, and I would listen to one side of the Ramones, and the other speaker would be my guitar. And I would just play that record until I learned it. I just played over and over and over every single song. And within like 4 months or something like that, I was pretty good at guitar.
That is truly a minute with Jimmy. You said that as fast as the Ramones playing a song.
I've learned my lesson. You know, the last time I thought I had more time than I did, so I squeezed it all in.
But that's a cool story, being able to learn how to play the guitar in 4 months and, you know, having one side the record and one side you so that you could hear. And
it's a little bit like you and Vinny listening to the Beatles.
It is, actually. That it reminded me of that.
I had this tape deck that had a 1/4-inch input on the front, and I don't know why, but it did, and it was perfect to plug a guitar into. So I could put the tape into record and pause, you know, so you're like in tape monitor in the old stereo parlance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could hear my guitar and I could hear the record that was playing, each in different speakers.
The things we used to do.
Yeah, the hoops we would jump through.
Yes, very different than today.
There's no garage band back then.
No.
We had literally garage bands back then.
True, true.
Minute with Jimmy, Minute with Jimmy, Minute with Jimmy.
Oasis supersonic single. Came out April 11th, 1994, celebrating 30 years. Opening drums, screeching down the fretboard, loud guitar, Liam Gallagher's voice, their first single. From their soon-to-be-released album, Definitely Maybe. It has Beatles-esque vocal harmonizing and mentions the Beatles' Yellow Submarine because they were heavily influenced by the Beatles and they didn't really try and hide it by any means. I remember the first time I heard that song and was like, this song is freaking excellent. I just love that song. Again, 30 years later, I still love that song.
Yeah.
Definitely introduced me to Oasis. I know Live Forever came out a few months later. And then I believe it was August of 1994 when the album Definitely Maybe came out. Still, you know, a high playing in rotation, you know, on my music. I absolutely, you know, enjoyed all of their albums. And it all started with that first one right there. Also celebrating a 30th anniversary, Live Throwing Copper album came out April 26, 1994. It's a really good album. Came out, I think, at just the right time because there was so much of grunge, and grunge was, you know, kind of, you know, been filtering through everything for a couple of years and people looking for a different type of sound. It was definitely much different than the music that was out at the time. And it seemed like they toured nonstop with this album, that they just kept touring for a few years with it. And they stopped here in Atlanta multiple times, playing in larger and larger places every time that they came here. It's in my top albums of 1994. Selling the Drama, first single, which came out in February of 94, peaked at number one on Billboard Modern Rock Tracks and 43 on Billboard Hot 100 Singles. Second single was I Alone, peaked at number six on the Billboard Modern Rock Tracks. That's a great song. That really, really is a great song. Great rock and roll song. Lightning Crashes was the next single, released on September 24th, 1994. A song the record company did not like at all. And it's funny because it finished 1994 as the number two song on Billboard's Album Rock Tracks, number six on Billboard's Modern Rock Tracks, and number 22 on Billboard's Top 40 Mainstream Charts.
Wow.
Record company didn't even like it. They didn't even want to release it. And it just goes to show anything can happen. They really believed in the song. They really liked it. So it actually worked out real well for them. And then All Over You was not released as a single in America, but still managed to peak at number 33 on the Billboard Hot 100 Airplay chart in 1995. So they definitely have a lot more charts in the 90s they started with and what they had previously in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Basically in the 60s, 70s, and 80s was a lot of actually buying the record and, you know, managing, you know, the charts from there. But in the 90s, they changed things up because bands weren't releasing it, but the radio was playing it, and, you know, it was a very, very different time. So Throwing Copper album made it to number one on Billboard Top 200 album charts on May 6, 1995. So here we are. We're talking about it came out in April of 94. It took a full year and 2 weeks, 3 weeks or whatever for it to hit the number one on the Billboard Top 200.
It had a lot of hits on it. So it was all over the radio for that whole year.
Yeah, and you heard me mention the different charts. I mean, it was on rock radio. It was on alternative radio. It was on top 40 radio. Mm-hmm. It was all over the place. Another one of the new bands that played at Woodstock 94, and you can hear their performance on the live Woodstock 94 album. Real good album. We talked about Green Day in one of the early episodes. Actually, it might have been episode one where Green Day had just released their performance from Woodstock 94.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah, and if the live one's really good, so if you get a chance, give it a listen. I recently saw them live, here in Atlanta in March at the Brookhaven Cherry Blossom Festival, and Ed Kowalczyk is the lone member remaining, but still sounds really good with his vocals, and it's definitely worth to see the band live. No pun intended.
I think you intended it.
Let's take a look at some recent new releases. Judas Priest released their 19th album in March 2024, titled Invincible Shield. If you like Judas Priest and heavy metal, then you will like this album. Some of the songs I'm listening to are Panic Attack, Invincible Shield, Crown of Thorns, and Trial by Fire. And I know some people are going to be like, what? Judas Priest? Again, this is music in my shoes. It's about music that I like, that I've always liked. I like all different types of music. And this is a perfect example where we're talking about Judas Priest. I saw them live in concert in 2022, was surprised at how good Rob Halford still sounded. And his vocals on this album don't disappoint either. Definitely a good album if you like The Priest. So, Jimmy, do you know where Judas Priest took their name from?
The Bible?
No. Close, but no.
Okay.
Believe it or not, it came from a Bob Dylan song, The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest.
Oh.
And to go a step further, the 1977 Judas Priest song, Diamonds and Rust, it's a cover song. A lot of people don't realize that. But it is a cover song originally written and sung by folk artist Joan Baez. And it was about her relationship with Bob Dylan in the early 1960s. Who would have thought Bob Dylan was that big an influence on Judas Priest?
Judas Priest always makes me think of this little documentary that's called Heavy Metal Parking Lot. And it was just somebody that had a video camera in the 80s and videotaped everybody hanging out in a parking lot before the big Judas Priest show. And it's hilarious because just all the characters and the way everybody's, you know, carrying on and partying and stuff. And it was a viral video before the internet. It was like you had to know somebody that made you a VHS of it because it was so funny, you know? And so my friend had Heavy Metal Parking Lot on VHS, and we'd watch it from time to time. Now you can find it on the internet, I'm sure.
I'm going to have to look it up. I have to admit, I have never heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably 15 minutes long or something. It's just a fun watch.
I'm looking forward to it, and I'll recap what I think once I watch it.
Okay.
I can't believe I've never heard of it.
It's very niche. If I didn't know somebody with a VHS, I wouldn't be telling you about it right now.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Keith Richards, March 1st, 2024, released a cover of the Velvet Underground's I'm Waiting for the Man. It's from the just-released album The Power of the Heart, a tribute to Lou Reed. It was originally on the 1967 album The Velvet Underground and Nico. Keith does a really good job on the vocals and does justice to the song. It's always good to hear a good cover of The Velvet Underground. I love The Velvet Underground and really enjoy when someone does a good cover. But Keith really sounds good on this song. Like, surprisingly, amazingly good. And I know he liked Lou Reed. Keith Richards didn't necessarily like a whole lot of musicians. He did like Lou Reed, and I don't know if he put more into it because it was Lou Reed. But it's really good. It really is. And, you know, the song might not be for everybody, but he definitely did justice to it.
I want to check that whole album out. I didn't realize it was out.
It just came out. I didn't get a chance to listen to anything else, but this song had been out, you know, for, you know, 6-7 weeks, so I've been listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
April 24th, 1964. While this is not a new release, this is about the Beatles. They finished filming A Hard Day's Night with the final scene of Ringo Starr putting his jacket over a puddle for a woman so she could step on the jacket and not get all muddy. He picks the jacket up again. He puts it over the next puddle. She walks on it, no problem. Picks it up a third time, he puts it over, but it's actually a hole in the ground and the woman falls all the way in and gets all wet and muddy. But yes, April 24th, 1964, the Beatles finished filming A Hard Day's Night. Hey, Jimmy, do you know what time it is?
Music in my shoes, mailbag.
Yes, it is. Music in my shoes, mailbag time. From Samantha Smith in New York, the girl in Say Anything, if you remember the last episode, I didn't know much about the girl that was in the movie Say Anything.
Right.
A listener did. The girl in Say Anything is Ione Skye, who has quite a few musical connections. Her dad is Donovan of Mellow Yellow fame.
Oh.
They call me Mellow Yellow. I'm not really a singer. You probably can tell just by hearing that.
No, I know the song.
She lived with Anthony Kiedis of the Red Hot Chili Peppers and was married to Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys. I didn't know any of that.
Now, wait a minute. Is she the girl in the movie Say Anything, or is she the girl that sings the song I'll Say Anything?
No, she's the girl. She's the girlfriend in the movie.
Okay.
That I didn't know who she was.
Gotcha.
I only talked about John Cusack and how you and him look so much alike.
Apparently.
Oh.
Who do people say you look like?
I'm not saying it where it's on record because it's not very complimentary.
All right.
So from Chris in Atlanta, Georgia, commenting on when we talked about INXS and we talked about The Clash, he says, INXS, first that few albums were great and still are. Dennis, he says, that's amazing. I saw The Clash on that tour about 3 weeks later. Maria, The Swing is their best album. And then Matt, he comments, because we talked about the Pixies also, Doolittle is a masterpiece.
Well said.
Well said. I agree with that. Frederick saw The Clash at Shea Stadium. They were the second band before The Who and David Johansen opened up. Now, I didn't go to the show, but I had totally forgotten that David Johansen actually opened up. I remembered The Clash opened up for The Who. I forgot about David Johansen opening it up. Way to remind us of that, Frederick. We appreciate that.
Yeah, from the New York Dolls, by the way.
That is correct. Definitely a different persona when he was David Johansen than from his earlier days.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, please like and follow us on the Music in My Shoes Facebook page or contact us at musicinmyshoes@gmail.com.
Music in My Shoes Mailbag.
That's it for episode 25 of Music in My Shoes. I'd like to thank Jimmy Guthrie, show producer and owner of Arcade 160 Studios, located here in Atlanta, Georgia, and to Vic Thrill for our podcast music. This is Jim Boge, and I hope you learned something new or remembered something old. We'll meet again on our next episode. Until then, live life and keep the music playing.